Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving, coming to you from sunny Culver City, California.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And Ken, we have a world in turmoil, and the political pressures from overseas, the political pressures in Iran, Korea, and that's not even mentioning Illinois and Minnesota.
I was going to say, I thought you were talking about New York state legislature, but I guess the big story of the week is what's going on in Iran, and of course, I'm watching everything, and we are assuming that the good guys didn't win the election, but who are the good guys, and who are the reformers, and if Ahmadinejad is not the winner, does that mean that there's democracy in Iran? You know, I think people don't really understand exactly what this whole thing is all about.
Not everybody agrees on what democracy is, even in the United States, let alone around the world. And clearly, Mousavi is not exactly Barack Obama. I mean, he is not going to be some sort of big, enormous friend of the United States. He's been part of the same regime. He's been involved in obtaining nuclear materials for that program. Obviously, though, in Tehran and in many of the other big cities, he is seen as an alternative to Ahmadinejad, who would be less confrontational with the West and, I suppose, to some degree, perhaps with Israel. People there would rather have peace and they'd rather have prosperity. I think the big issue there is the economy.
And I think stupid. And I say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you stupid. And I think
not this time.
But also, what does the United States want? That seems to be a big divide going on here. Not so much between President Obama and the Republican Party, but between the Republican Party and the Republican Party.
The Republican Party, I think, is trying to deal with the issue of change itself. Quick statistic: Ronald Reagan won 55% of the white non-Hispanic vote in 1980, won in a landslide, became a legend.
I have a feeling that John McCain did similar numbers.
55% of the white Anglo vote in 2008 became a big loser. So this is a different demographic.
John McCain has been saying over and over again that Barack Obama is a little soft on Iran, is not giving the right message of indignation about the outcome of the election, whereas Dick Lugar, who is also a revered or respected Republican elder statesman, says, look, Obama's tone is exactly right.
You know, I think Lugar is both respected and revered. In fact, he's generated and veneered. But Dick Lugar probably does not speak for the mainstream of the Republican Party. Most of the neocons, it seems to me, are lining up with this idea that the United States should be in there pitching against Ahmadinejad, no matter who the alternative is, and that we're going to be accused of meddling whether we meddle or not, so let's get in there and meddle.
But I think what Lugar's saying makes complete sense, saying that if we do get involved, that's exactly what the conservative clerics would want us to do. And then they could point out, look, the U.S. is interfering, and this is proof that it's outside agitators, as Norman Fell said in The Graduate, that is responsible for the problems.
All these agitators. You're not one of these agitators, are you? Let me just say, though, Dick Lugar, while I think he expresses a view that is very much the sophisticated view of the foreign policy establishment, Republican and Democrat, just does not have the heat that some of his colleagues have. And I think Barack Obama's got a much bigger problem with some of those other Republicans who are going to make whatever he does on this particular policy decision, and also in Korea, and also in other parts of the world, look soft.
Well, I thought one of the big problems that Barack Obama would have in, for example, the war funding legislation was from the left wing of the Democratic Party, the anti-war left. But as it turned out, only 32 Democrats voted against that $106 billion funding bill.
And that was down from more than 50 the last time around from the peace wing of the Democratic Party. Now, who do you credit for that, Ken? Nancy Pelosi, who gave a very strong speech in the caucus before the vote, or that other guy who used to work in the House and helped a lot of these folks get elected?
Rombo,
the man from the White House, the guy who comes down Pennsylvania Avenue spewing sparks and brimstone and somehow makes a lot of people see things differently. A lot of folks risked a lot to vote with the White House on that particular bill.
Well, of course, one, the White House did make it sweeter by throwing in $5 billion for the International Monetary Fund.
Sweeter for whom?
What'd you call me? But what I thought was the best part about this whole thing, if you looked at the vote, it was the anti-war Democratic Party that voted for this war funding bill and the so-called pro-war Republican Party that voted against it.
Ah, but Ken, you know this wasn't really a bill for the troops. This wasn't a bill just for our guys and our gals over there in uniform braving danger. This was a bill for global bailout. You can explain that to everybody, can't you?
Well, and at some other time I will. But
that's what they said. The International Monetary Fund was getting that $5 billion. So the Republican Party, with, I believe, five exceptions, voted against it because it had $5 billion for the International Monetary Fund, which I believe is an obligation that the United States had already committed to back into the previous administration.
This became not so much a funding bill for the soldiers overseas, but on Barack Obama. And if you were a Democrat, you voted for it. If you're a Republican, you voted against it. And it became plain old politics.
I think that there is a huge point to be made here about substance versus personality. We see it in Iran, where all of a sudden Americans are lionizing this fellow Mousavi. A week ago, we hadn't heard of him. And acting as though somehow he's a savior for American interests in the Middle East. And, you know, he's almost certainly not that. Whatever else he is almost certainly not that. And back here in the United States, where we think of ourselves as being much more evolved in our political system and our democracy, and a major vote of this nature pretty much devolves, as you described it, as a vote for or against the president, whoever that happens to be. And on a partisan basis, the president either wins or loses.
I don't know why the Congress can't have the same sophistication that they have in the New York State Senate.
You know, that's really where democracy works. It's closer to the people.
Exactly.
At the state level, the local level. We should talk about some of the great local governments we have around the country.
You said loco, right?
Because tell us about Albany.
It is loco in Albany.
Albany is close to the Bronx, isn't it?
No, it's not, actually. But, of course, if you're looking at Earth from a satellite, it is close. But what's
from California, it looks very close.
Okay, when we last left our listener, we had two renegade Democrats who voted for the Republicans in the Albany State Senate to give the Republicans a 32-30 lead in the State Senate. Now one Democrat, Hiram Monserrat, has now returned to the Democratic fold, leaving the New York State Senate in a 31-31 deadlock.
You know, and there was more joy amongst the other sheep at the return of the 100th missing sheep than there was over the 99 that never left the flock.
And if one of those sheep should happen to fall... Anyway, but we could make fun of this all we want, and we have been, but the problem here is that there is major legislation that is not getting done, funding for New York City schools, control of New York City schools, funding for rent control apartments, same-sex marriage that Governor Patterson was trying to push through, but now we don't know who runs the show in Albany. Matter of fact, apparently nobody does run the show in Albany.
And that could have serious consequences. As you suggest, this isn't just a sideshow, and it isn't just a circus. There are real changes that some people in New York would like to see happen in social policy, economic policy, that can't happen as long as they're going at it in this kind of hurly-burly over who's in charge.
And I don't know how it changes. A state Supreme Court justice said, look, we want no part of this. You guys are going to have to fight it out among yourselves.
Easy on the 30-way long.
So we don't know what's going to happen with that. But I think the one group in this country that seems to be happy about what's going on in the New York State Legislature is the Illinois State Legislature, because not long ago they were being mocked for incompetence and corruption and arrogance and things like that. But there is some developments on the Illinois political scene.
That is an interesting story, because there you have Lisa Madigan, who is a statewide office holder, who is now in the, if you will, catbird seat, with the White House trying to get her to run for the United States Senate to replace Roland Burris, enough said. And at the same time, some of the people in Springfield preferring that she run for governor of the state of Illinois. And whichever way she goes, Mark Kirk, who is kind of the Republican great hope right now in Illinois.
Congressman Mark Kirk, right?
Will go the other way. In other words, he'll run for governor if Madigan runs for the Senate and vice versa.
Well, Lisa Madigan, as long as I've been following her career, she always wanted to be governor. And of course, she had a great target in Rod Blagojevich, who was just such a sitting duck. But now that Blagojevich is gone, and Pat Quinn, not only is Pat Quinn a seemingly decent, good government kind of guy, he's also a David Axelrod client. So perhaps one of the reasons the White
even
House...
Even more important.
Exactly, much more important. Look, obviously, Roland Burris holding Barack Obama's Senate seat is an embarrassment. The White House would love somebody else to be there. Of course,
anybody else.
Right, and the state treasurer, who was thought to be an ally of Dick Durbin, is running, and Chris Kennedy, the son of RFK, is thought to be running too. But Lisa Madigan was elected twice statewide, has strong approval ratings. Her father, of course, is the powerful Speaker of the House. And if she runs for the Senate, look, Roland Burris has not raised a nickel for a campaign. He doesn't have any kind of campaign organization.
Can you imagine somebody giving money to Roland Burris?
Yeah, Rod Blagojevich.
Or Bill Jefferson.
Actually, there was a Bill Jefferson opening statement this week.
Yeah, just parenthetically, Bill Jefferson is in court fighting for his life over that $90,000 found in his freezer, and he hasn't had a very good explanation, neither has his lawyer. So that case continues. Stay tuned, folks.
So anyway, if Lisa Madigan decides to run for the Senate, It saves Pat Quinn from an ugly primary challenge. It gives Mark Kirk, as you suggested, a tougher question about his political future. And it probably gives some sigh of relief to the White House, because they'd rather have a united Democratic Party. And the way to do it, perhaps, is to let Pat Quinn run for governor and let Lisa Madigan run for the Senate. I don't know if there's going to be any kind of outcry by Roland Burr's supporters, whatever that might mean, or whoever they might be, if she challenges him. But for all we know, he may not even run for a full term.
It'll be messy, but I don't see that his situation at this point is defensible. And in that four-way, five-way Democratic primary for the Senate that you were describing a moment ago, it seems to me that Lisa Madigan would be in the driver's seat. Now, some states have some different political problems suddenly emerging. In the state of Nevada, where everybody thought that the focus was going to be on Harry Reid's reelection next year, Senate majority leaders sometimes get beat, and Nevada is a tough state for Democrats these days, sometimes. What has happened with John Ensign?
Well, John Ensign, who had been the chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee in the last go-around, of course.
Losing 7.5 seats.
Right, exactly. Soon to be 8, we think, because we expect some kind of a Minnesota decision momentarily, possibly. John Ensign admitted to having an affair last year with the wife of his chief of staff, and he went to Nevada this week without his wife. He basically spoke before cameras in Las Vegas this week, but of course took no questions.
In a casual shirt with no tie or jacket.
And no Senate lapel pin, and no supportive wife at his side. Again, is this something we care about? The only reason I think it's a story is because John Ensign is the same person who, during the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky thing, said what Bill Clinton did was a disgrace and he should resign the presidency. So it's the issue of hypocrisy we always talk about. It's not so much the sexual dalliance, it's the hypocrisy. And if John Ensign is going to talk about the Defense of Marriage Act and talk about the sanctity of marriage and talk about how Bill Clinton sinned, then, you know, it comes back to bite you. And
you know what else? Two other things about John Ensign. One, he was the chairman of the Republican Policy Committee after the campaign committee. Nobody blamed him for all those losses in 2008, or at least not many did. They gave him the policy job, which is not a meaningless
number
job.
Number four job in the leadership.
Not meaningless. It does put you on the ladder of succession, and nobody knows how much longer Mitch McConnell may be around, maybe another 2-4 years, but at least it puts him on the ladder to go up in the Senate.
Well, plus he was in Iowa.
What in the world is he doing in Iowa? Everybody knows that the Republican Party has a leadership vacuum, and when a still relatively youthful, very telegenic, well-spoken man from the West goes into Iowa, he's a presidential candidate,
right,
automatically.
Right, right. And I think we could say goodbye to his presidential bid, and I think we could say goodbye to his leadership aspirations in the Senate. We could possibly say goodbye to Republican hopes of beating Harry Reid
next year. That's the most ironic thing of
because
all.
Because Nevada Governor Jim Gibbons is very, very unpopular, and the Republican Party now in Nevada is ruined, and we perhaps could say goodbye to this week's political podcast.
It's almost it for this week's political podcast, Ken. I mean, aside from the fact that I say when it's quitting time at Terra, I would like to also go back to an issue that's come up a couple of times, both in regard to John Ensign and in regard to President Obama's week and in regard to what's going on up in New York and some of the bills that are stalled. It's all about gay rights. And I can tell you out here in California, even though this week President Obama decided by executive order to make benefits available to the same-sex partners of federal employees, there is an enormous sense of dissatisfaction with his performance on these issues. He campaigned on the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act, and he also campaigned on overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, and he hasn't made any steps in that direction. If anything, he seems to be going back the other way. So even though the president stepped out and took some chances with respect to federal employees this week, there's still a lot of unhappiness on that issue.
The president still seems hesitant about tackling major social issues like gay rights, like guns. He takes a step forward, but not the two steps forward that most of the advocacy groups want him to take.
If not three steps forward or four steps forward, there's real disillusionment with him on this. And we're going to have to see if between the war issue, on which the peace wing of the party is unhappy, and on these issues, he is beginning to see any serious deterioration in his left side base. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in